Hello, welcome back to the Eye on La Liga podcast for Marca in English. We're a little later than normal this week, but we had to see what happened in the Champions League. Were there going to be any shocks or surprises? Were Real Madrid going to top the group with that grand finale winner takes all against Borussia Dortmund on Wednesday night? And boy, oh boy, were the neutral fans entertained by that one, as I'm sure were some Barca fans too. We have plenty to get into, though, in a very busy week or so from La Liga. We've got, of course, the El Clasico fallout to get onto. Elsewhere, there were some interesting results for Atletico Madrid and Celta Vigo last weekend. And then, of course, plenty of action coming your way too. I'm very glad indeed that I'm not doing this on my own this week, as Aldo Sainati once again joins me on the show, writer for Marca in English, avid football journalist based on all things Spanish football. Aldo, mate, how are you doing today?
Hey, Ollie, good to be here. What a week of football we've just had. Excited to get started. Lots to talk about. Really good stuff this week.
Yeah, there's plenty on the pitch to distract our attentions from stuff off the pitch. But, I mean, just very quickly, in the last day or so, Luis Suarez signing a new contract is set to keep him at Barca. We're going to touch on Barca and Real Madrid straight off. But it's just interesting that Barca and Real Madrid are just starting to lock down some of the big boy players on very big contracts at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they got to make sure that these guys stay with the clubs. And, you know, there's always a lot of speculation about whether they'll move on to go somewhere new, but I mean, the clubs know what they want and know that these guys are players that they need to shore up. So Suarez, of course, and a lot of Real players as well recently signing new contracts, especially with that transfer ban coming. So they really need to make sure that they stay on board.
Yeah, keeping the hands on the hottest property in world football. Elsewhere on the show today, joining us. Not saying that I forgot about him in any way, shape or form, just eager to dive into the Spanish football discussion. A man who doesn't concentrate himself on just the big three in La Liga. Writer for Eibar the Brave and, of course, writer on Marca in English as well. Ewan McTeer joins us once again on the show. Ewan, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good. I mean, when Suarez signs a new contract, that's the kind of thing we have to dive straight in with, you know.
Well, I will. I don't want to leave you stuck in the corner in any way, shape, or form on the podcast, mate. Maybe it's just the kind of home nations rivalry thing coming into bits and bobs as we go through. It's just naturally in me as an Englishman. Ewan, just out of interest, Eibar the Brave still available in the shops for the Christmas period as we get down to December 25th.
Yeah, conveniently so.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure, Aldo, you'll be picking that one up, I'm sure, for any loved ones in the last few days. Shameless plugs out of the way. Now let's get on to the big, important discussion of El Clasico, the fallout. We had a big preview last week on the show, and now we can take a look back and see what exactly happened in the big one. Luis Suarez with the goal after 53 minutes to give Barca the lead. And then, once more, the 90-minute man, Sergio Ramos, with a incredible last minute equaliser for Los Blancos. Gents, it wasn't exactly the showpiece thriller that I think we were all hoping for. It was an entertaining game, though, as El Clasico always is, but considering what we've had in previous years, Ewan, it wasn't all that and then some, really, was it?
Yeah, I mean, they obviously had the afternoon kickoff time, tried to show the best of La Liga to the Asian market, and they might have wished that they hadn't, because the quality wasn't quite as there as it has been in previous Clasicos. It was a fascinating game, with it being close all the way throughout, and it was very end-to-end. I thought there was, whenever you thought one team was starting to take control of the game, the other one came right back in it, so it was fascinating to watch, but the quality on show, especially from the poster boys, wasn't quite as there as we've seen in the past.
Well, we know that MSN has been struggling at times in front of goal, and that Barca side in recent weeks has been struggling anyway. We know that Benzema has had the boo boys out at the Bernabeu for him. What I thought was quite interesting was how Zinedine Zidane, we mentioned he can influence and change a game from the dugout. Had a whole host of options, of course, in the likes of James Rodriguez and others on the bench to influence the game. And actually, the substitutions he made were the youngsters, some of the youth boys, the likes of Casemiro, Asensio, coming off the bench to try and change this game for Los Blancos. It shows Zidane's got he's not fazed by big names need to play in the big games and they're the people that need to come on. He's making far more astute tactical decisions through these games. And I think that was highlighted in bringing these guys on in El Clasico.
Yeah, it really was. When you consider the last Clasico, this time last year, when essentially cost Rafa Benitez his job, that he played James, and there was all sorts of rumours flying about as to why he played James, that it wasn't entirely what he wanted to do. But it was a classical, and you have to play your best stars, whereas now Zidane has been given the free rein to play who he thinks would be best to play, and it's working out for them far better.
And El Clasico as well, of course, Iniesta returning off the bench for Barca was a big injection of life. Aldo, I actually saw you talking about this on Twitter earlier in the week. The return of Iniesta, you think, highlights the fact that this is exactly what Barca have been missing over the last few weeks or so. You can talk about MSN, you can talk about Messi being injured, etc., but it's that man in the heart of the pitch that controls and builds the attacks. And El Clasico for you seemed like it was a statement to vindicate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, it's no secret that they're one team with Iniesta, one team without him. And, I mean, looking at the Clásico specifically, we saw a much better Real Madrid in that first half when Iniesta wasn't playing. You know, Luka Modric was really dominating. And, you know, I'd sort of echo what Ewan said. It was a bit of a strange Clásico. The quality wasn't necessarily there. But I think one of the biggest reasons for that is we saw a Barcelona team without any ideas. They just didn't look like they had any major philosophy or anything that was really working for them. You couldn't really see what they were trying to do, whereas Zidane, you can support him or criticize him, but he really had a set idea of play. And, you know, the Real Madrid looked like a very compact team. They were very good off the ball in the first half and into the second. And when Iniesta came on, it was almost immediate. And the team, you know, Barcelona especially, they just looked like they sort of, oh, this is how we're going to play. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And it looked like they finally had an idea. But, you know, without him, I think it's just very, very obvious that they lacked the sort of structure, the composure, and, you know, psychologically, they're just very dependent on him. And I think, you know, it was quite clear, and we've seen that not just in the Clásico, but in this last month. And now with him coming back, it's very obvious that this is the case with him and then without him.
What about the almost the game killers in this one? Touched on that the quality, as Ewan said, wasn't up to its best, if you will, for an El Clásico or for either of these two sides. But there are two men on the pitch that really seem to just shut down and try and mob and control the heart of the pitch in Luka Modric and Sergio Busquets. Busquets in particular almost getting back to not his best per se, but very disruptive, breaking down Real Madrid attacks before they even really got going and hassling in the heart of the pitch. And another man, Modric, who's had time away this season, who's come back and has been a real game changer for Real Madrid, just picking up their form again after that run of four draws earlier in the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, with Busquets, it was very obvious that he's picked up a little bit. There was even questions at some point earlier in the season as to, are Barcelona better when he's not in the team? Is it maybe worth switching to a 3-4-3 to get the best out of Busquets? But on in the Clásico on Saturday, he showed that he can be the guy that, like you say, he's the disruptor. And yeah, it might not have made for quite as much of a spectacle as some were hoping for, but if you're a Barcelona fan, that's exactly what you want him to be doing when they're trying to get the ball forward quickly to their front three.
Who really are the winners and losers from this El Clásico? I mean, obviously, won a piece on the score sheet, but we knew Enrique was under pressure. We knew that Zidane was enjoying a pretty pleasant period at Real Madrid after turning things around after the slight sticky patch around about September, October time. Who's come out in terms of individuals from El Clásico as a kind of the shining grace? Obviously touched on Iniesta and the impact he's made on his return.
I'd say Zidane in a lot of ways. I think that, you know, we've been sort of wondering whether this unbeaten run is really showing his skills as a manager, if it's rather just the team picking up good form. And I think that, you know, starting with the win, the dominant win over Atleti, and sort of Sergio Ramos kind of coming in with that late goal, we are sort of seeing what Zidane's looking to create. And I think we're getting a lot more of a clearer picture. And Zidane for me was one of the big winners, and his Real are at least right now looking like they have more ideas in terms of collective play, and I was fairly impressed by what he sought out to do.
Yeah, I think Lucas Vasquez as well had an impressive Clásico. He came away from that because obviously Gareth Bale had picked up his injury last week and he's out for several months, and Lucas Vasquez is more often than not probably going to be the guy that comes in on that right-hand side to fill in for him. And yeah, a lot of people have been doubting Vasquez. He's no Bale, but he's no chump either, and I think he showed that in the Clásico. He did his job well. He almost won them a penalty in the first couple of minutes, and he created a few more chances, and he trapped back as often as he needed to help Carvajal with Neymar on that right-hand side. So I think he'll have reassured a lot of Real Madrid fans that, you know, life without Bale won't be quite as bad as they might have feared.
Mm-hmm. And he's definitely one of the Zidane's biggest players. He's such an important squad player, and I think that the fact that he's been able to kind of fit in, and not just with the Bale injury, but other injuries that Real have been having, and I think that's one of the big reasons why these guys are sort of ready to come in, and that a lot is down to Zidane.
What about Luis Enrique, just finally, before we look elsewhere around La Liga? Last weekend, there was plenty of talk about perhaps this would be a real game changer if he did lose. Madrid would have been 9 points clear at the top of the table. It's still just the 6-point gap that they have between Barca now. Has Luis Enrique done anything to help his stock in any way, shape or form as a manager? Does this just keep him a bit of a poise on... The jury's a bit out for his time at Barcelona at the moment, whether he should be looking for, or whether the club should be looking for a replacement for him. Has it altered his position in any way?
I think he comes out of it looking quite good as well. I mean, there wasn't that much more you think that he could have done. And he said after the game that he was quite clear to his players, don't give away any fouls around the box in the last few minutes. And as much as he was sort of throwing Turan under the bus with that, if that's true, if that's something he was saying, then you can't completely pin the loss on him. There wasn't that much that I thought he could have done differently, looking at his bench, looking at the substitutions that he made. I think there was logic behind everything that he did, and they very nearly came away with the win. So if they'd won 1-0, been able to close the gap to 3 points at the top, everybody would be hailing him as a genius, and he was, you know, one Sergio Ramos header away from being that genius, as many other coaches had been in the past. So, yeah, I don't think... any of the criticism of Enrique after this game was maybe as deserved as it was after the Real Sociedad game.
Good result for Real Madrid in terms of they've been away at Atleti and at Barca now this season and not been defeated. As you mentioned, Vasquez chopped down by Mascherano in the early part of the game, but not too feisty an encounter in terms of the bloodlust that we normally see perhaps between these two. And El Clasico, as we say, leaves Real Madrid still with a 6-point advantage at the top of the La Liga table over Barca. We're going to look elsewhere around the table when we come back here on the show, and particularly having a little gander at Espanyol, who are on an amazing run of form defensively in the last few weeks. More on that when we return. To Eye on La Liga from Marca in English. Remember to follow us at Marca in English, all one word, on Twitter. That's at Marca in English, all one word. And subscribe as well on iTunes and Audio Boom. I've got Ewan and Aldo alongside me here on the show. And let's just have a little look elsewhere around the league, gentlemen, before we touch on any sort of the Champions League exploits from midweek with the slightly later show today. Atletico Madrid taking on Espanyol. Atleti been on a slide recently. Title hopes have really started to fade away. Simeone has been under a touch of criticism in the last few weeks. Hosting an Espanyol side that really, in theory, Atleti would have hoped to have beaten away rather convincingly, with Espanyol sat in the kind of middle part of the table. Wasn't the case at all. And it's now almost 500 minutes, 496 in fact, since Diego Lopez has conceded a goal. 5 clean sheets in the Liga in a row. Espanyol, their last defeat came against Celta Vigo back on the 25th of September. A quite magnificent run from the mid-table side. Quique Sanchez Flores, not so long ago, we were looking at and thinking, this is a guy who could be out of the job in the near future, particularly after the result, or half of the game, against Eibar back in October. Now, since then, just turned things around completely. Unbelievable, the run Espanyol have been on in La Liga. What do you put this down to? Has Sanchez Flores changed anything, gentlemen, or has that defence, that back line, just had a little bit more support from Fuego and Papa Diop in the last few weeks? They didn't go and play five and six at the back, really, Vicente Calderon against Atletico, and still came away with the victory. Helped perhaps by an Atletico front line that just isn't firing at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's fair that the Atletico Madrid front line's been a little bit off colour recently. Antoine Griezmann had a couple of good chances in that game, and when he had been in his good form in September and October, you'd expected him to take those chances, and that record we're talking about for Diego Lopez would be all the way back at zero. So that definitely played a factor, but when you're playing a team like Atletico Madrid away from home, you need that little bit of luck, and it's true that they did limit them to very few chances. And when you ask, has Sanchez Flores changed something? Well, when you consider that they lost the opening day of the season 6-4 to Sevilla, and they were losing 3-0 at half-time to Eibar, he must have done something. But there hasn't been, like you say, there hasn't been a massive tactical switch. He's kept his sort of same basic 4-4-2 formation throughout. And I think, as you sort of mentioned there, it's just been a case of an evolution more than a radical change. The players have got a bit more comfortable in the system, I think. The forward players are tracking back a little bit more than they used to, and they've just started to click.
Go on, Aldo. I know you were to jump.
Yeah, no, it's I definitely agree with what Ewan just said. He, going back to Kike Sanchez Flores, it wasn't maybe not so much a radical tactical change or anything like that, but I think it was just something that he probably just worked on and something that the team focused on. You know, after a couple of the first few weeks of La Liga, that Espanyol's defense was just all over the place and they were conceding, you know, 5-6 goals a game. You know, you have to work on that. And it's very clear that that they emphasized that, and they were able to really change their fortunes in that regard. And, you know, I'd say one player in particular that I was fairly impressed was Aaron, who was one of the outside backs for Espanyol. He looked quite good in a comfortable win over Leganés a few weeks ago, and you know, even the individual pieces themselves have really picked up form. So it's more, for me at least, the individual side of things that have really picked it up. And as you mentioned, also the midfield is helping out a little bit more in being more compact, and you know, the team itself has a bit more of an identity. They're looking to counter a bit more. Leo Baptistão is obviously very good in transition, so things are going well for them in terms of kind of finding a way to play, and you can really tell, and obviously with so many minutes without conceding is a good sign for them.
I mean, football obviously requires a fair bit of patience. Kike Sanchez Flores, it didn't work out early on in the season, as you said, for Espanyol, and looked in trouble as a manager. I mean, are we seeing clubs just, especially in the middle of the pack, starting to be a little smarter with the time that they give managers? You know, we've seen the likes of Valencia have run through managers, you know, time and time again, but that's in part because of the pressure that comes with being in that club that still consider themselves a massive club in Spanish football, and they are, I suppose, in terms of the size and support, but perhaps not in terms of the results on the pitch and realistic aims. But it just shows, I think, the vindication of you allow a manager to come in and let him do his thing for 6 to 12 months. That's when you can get a judge of how good a coach is going to be at embedding a system and at dealing with the players. You can't expect instant results all the time. Now, I'm not saying Espanyol will go without conceding for another 5 games in La Liga or anything like that. I'm just saying, surely this is a sign that a bit of patience actually ends up paying off in the long run for most of these clubs, in the heart of the La Liga table.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I mean, he barely has time to diagnose the problem. I mean, if you've conceded so many goals early in the season, you have to sort of give the manager a chance to really solve that and give him time on the training pitch to really start to address the issues that he's able to see. So, I mean, right now, at least with Kike Sanchez Flores, we're seeing how he saw a problem early on in the season and then how he was able to respond to that. And, you know, maybe you compare to some other clubs where there's maybe more pressure, they're, just changing managers left and right. And, you know, here we saw a case where the Espanyol board was able to give him you know, give them more time. And I think that, you know, that makes sense. This is not something that you can solve immediately. And after a couple of other games, he now has a good streak in which the team's defense is now kind of the foundation for the entire team. So, you know, there is, I guess, a tendency to not give managers enough time. And in this case, at least, you see that what he's done on the training pitch is really what you're seeing on the pitch right now.
Maybe Kike Sanchez-Flores could sit down, have a chat with Eduardo Berizzo, Celta Vigo manager, because in terms of defending, this Celta Vigo side is absolutely disastrous. And firepower alone seems to get them out of all of these holes that they put themselves in. They've now conceded 26 in La Liga this season. There is no team in the top 13 of the La Liga table that's conceded more. And there's only a handful of teams throughout the whole of the La Liga table that have conceded more this season, with Betis and Sporting Gijón conceding 28, and then Granada and Osasuna 30 and 29, respectively. Yet somehow they still find themselves in ninth position and still knocking on the door, along with Sociedad Bilbao, Eibar, in that battle for sixth place and fifth place with Villarreal for Europa League spots in La Liga. Celta, another game where they've conceded a host of goals. Betis going, almost running riot in front of goal, taking a 3-2 lead late into the game before Roncaglia is able to salvage something for Celta Vigo once again. They just can't get a system right at the moment under Berizzo. And despite the success in front of goal, you still feel that this Celta side has to buck their ideas up a little bit.
Yeah, they seem to be having a lot of fun. I think the fans at Balaidos, I mean, some of the games they've been able to see this season have been fantastically brilliant, and then they've been absolutely heartbreaking as well at the same time. I mean, they lost 5-0 to Villarreal just a week after beating Barcelona 4-3. Lots of goals, but sometimes they go for them, sometimes they don't. After a season like last year where they managed to get into the Europa League, where they've been equally scoring and conceding. I think they drew 2-2 with Ajax and then 3-3 as well, or they lost 3-2. The goals have just been pouring in at both ends, and I think after you get to the Europa League as a fan, I imagine you don't mind so much when you have really exciting games and you're still in the mix. If they ultimately don't make it at the end of this season, but they go on a bit of a run in Europe and they enjoy their, you know, a few fantastic memorable games in La Liga, then you remember that for far longer than you do a season of 0-0s and 1-0s and ultimately coming up just short as well. So, yeah, the fans I know from Celta Vigo, they seem to be enjoying most of the games, but there's been a few really hard-to-take losses as well.
They're definitely a fun team. I mean, there's no question about that. Iago Aspas is just scoring as much as he possibly can, and even if it's unsustainable, I think I'd agree with you in that they're just fun to watch, and that's getting the fans happy. And you know, they're still in that Europa League group, and I mean, I guess the draw with Betis on the weekend was sort of a crazy game that they're becoming accustomed to. Del Amo for Betis has made a couple changes since taking over, and we saw that as well. But you know, Iago Aspas is just been unstoppable, and even though that defense isn't as great as they need it to be, they're a fun team to watch, and that's all you can ask for maybe from a mid-table club like Celta.
Fun to watch, I think, is definitely, as I say, the neutrals are probably enjoying it, and if the Celta fans are enjoying it as well, that's great. The only worry is when they're not able, if Aspas just goes through perhaps a slight dip in form, if they're not able to find those goals after they put themselves in these holes, it might just turn slightly on Berizzo. Definitely needs to have a look at his defending in that Celta side. Another side that perhaps needs to have a look at their defending from the weekend as well, and this was, I think, arguably the biggest shock of the weekend. Real Sociedad is conceding 5 against lowly Deportivo La Coruña. A massive win for Depor, just to move them away from that bottom three a little more. But can anybody tell me where this result came from? Because Sociedad have been very good consistently this season so far at keeping teams out. Don't concede that many. And then to suddenly ship 5 in one weekend against a lowly, and let's not be too disrespectful for Deportivo La Coruña, but a lowly Depor side that has struggled this season so far. I didn't see this one coming at all.
Yeah, when you lose by four goals, there's obviously multiple reasons why you've lost. There's not just one thing. But I think the absence in midfield of David Zuratuza was a massive factor. I mean, in recent weeks, Asier Yarramendi's been getting all the praise for how effective their midfield has been. But he's been the sort of sidekick, if you will, just quietly doing his job alongside Yarramendi. And he's almost been just as important, if not more so. And he was injured. He might be injured again this weekend. And I think you really saw that, especially in the first few minutes. And then once you fall one or two goals behind early on, then it's a uphill battle. But yeah, that was a big shock, especially against Deportivo. I mean, they've done some things well this season, but scoring goals hasn't really been one of them since they sold Lucas Perez. They really struggled to find somewhere to get him from, but Ryan Babel stepped up a little bit, and Florin Andone as well. So yeah, I think that hole in midfield with Zuratuza was one factor, but yeah, when you lose 5-1, there's a few other things too.
I think it's a Depor side, Aldo, that have just underperformed this season, and actually they deserve, or they have a squad that's good enough to be in and around that middle of the pack. Ewan touched on there on losing Perez this season, and goals, as he said, haven't come too frequently for this Depor side. They only had 13 in La Liga before the weekend, before they shipped five. But if they can get the goal situation right, there's enough quality in this team that they shouldn't be too near the likes of Gijón, Granada and Osasuna come the perhaps final third of the season.
Yeah, I actually think that they don't have the squad needed to really fix that goal-scoring problem. I mean, you really get the sense that they needed a win like this. Florin Andone was obviously the guy who really needed a game like this just to sort of change course. I mean, they're a team that struggles for goals, and I think they will continue struggling for goals. I don't think that they have the quality really. At least they haven't shown it yet to really push for a higher finish in La Liga. I think that they're going to be hovering around that relegation zone battle for a little while longer. They're just not a team that create too many chances, and I don't see that they have the players that'll really make a difference to create chances individually. And it's not just that they're not scoring goals. What's more worrying is that they're not a team that's offensively, at least in an attacking sense, is really creating a lot. So there's not much for the striker to do in a lot of cases, and they're I mean, I think right where they should be in terms of their position in La Liga.
Damning from Aldo.
Yeah, no, the few matches of Depor I've seen this season have not been promising in that sense. I mean, they have a couple of good players defensively, but I'm not too positive in terms of their prospects now.
I wonder if you caught the 4-0 defeat against Barca and followed that up with the 4-1 defeat against Celta Vigo in
the derby.
If those were the two, then those might be the ones that you that might be why you're not feeling too confident about Depor's ability to move away from that relegation battle, mate.
I'm big on Sydney though, so they've got a couple of players that are worth that.
At least you can get something positive out of this Depor side, because the start of the season has been absolutely disastrous. That just on the weekend, their first victory since October with the win against Sporting Gijón, and they really needed that considering that Gijón embroiled in that relegation battle as well. Down at the bottom of the Liga table, let's turn our eyes to the Champions League when we come back here on the show and take a look at who exactly are the likes of Barca, Real Madrid, Atleti and Sevilla going to want to get in that knockout round draw, and look back at some of the action as well from the last couple of days. And we return here on Eye on La Liga. Welcome back to the show. Remember, Marker in English on Twitter, at Marker in English on Twitter is where you can find the breaking news on social media, and of course on Facebook as well, Marker in English. Eye on La Liga is having a look back now at the Champions League football. We don't often get to do this on the show, but considering the late timing of this week's encounter on the podcast between Aldo and Ewan, who seem to be slightly at loggerheads in terms of their thoughts on Deportivo La Coruña. Let's see if they go head-to-head again on the Champions League in midweek, because Real Madrid suffering a late blow against Borussia Dortmund, last-minute equaliser for the German side, meaning that they top the group in the Champions League. Big blow for Madrid at the Bernabeu. Dortmund tend to do well against Los Blancos as well. Atleti beaten by Bayern Munich. Barca convincing against Gladbach, and Sevilla end up as runners-up in their group, which really was, I thought, a very tough draw for Sampaoli's side. But they're elated to get through to the knockout stages. We know the group winners. We know the group runners-up. First, let's talk about the action. Madrid, I guess they left it late in El Clasico, and then they had to have a taste of their own medicine, so to speak, Ewan, against Dortmund last night.
Yeah, I mean, they were pushing for that third goal, trying to get the 3-1 and seal the game. And, you know, Zidane in the past, in some of these games where they've had the lead and they're trying to be nurse at the end, they have sat back a little bit more. So it was a little bit strange to see them really go for the killer blow, which they haven't always done in these tight European games. And then Marcelo loses the ball on the left wing, and Borussia are able to break. And so often when Real Madrid have lost the ball in attack and they're facing a counter-attack, Marcelo's the one who's bursting back and you know, saving them at the other end. But when he lost the ball, there was nobody there. And against a team like Dortmund, there aren't that many that can counter-attack as well as they can. And as soon as he lost the ball, you sort of thought, oh, okay, this is going to be the...
It was wasted chances for Los Blancos going for that third. I mean, Marcelo had a chance. A whole host of them fell to the likes of Benzema and James as well. James, though, Aldo, playing in the Champions League this week, seemed to put on a pretty decent performance. I was chastised the last time I gave James Rodriguez any credit in a Real Madrid shirt, so I'm going to let you try and do that instead this week, and hopefully your social media will get bombarded with James haters, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that to me is so surprising is that I think Zidane, even though he rarely plays James, the times that he does play him, we just sort of see a very free role for him. And I think that he kind of gives him the entire control. And I mean, I was very impressed by James, you know, the entire match. I think until he got subbed off, he was controlling things. He had that very accurate ball for Benzema's header, and not just the assist, but I mean, he looked like he was controlling play very well in this sort of... I think it was quite an end-to-end match, very back and forth, and that really suited him in that he had a lot of space, he had a lot of touches, and he was getting involved a lot. And I think that was a huge improvement. And the problem is, even a performance like this, you get the sense that it might not be so much what James does or what Zidane does. There's just too many players for too few roles, and I mean, the player needs minutes. So even though he did put in this impressive performance, I don't know if it'll change things too much, but you know, in this game in particular, he did look very, very good.
Gents, I mean, the other games in midweek weren't exceptionally thrilling, so to speak, in terms of the Spanish sides. Barca were very good against Gladbach and bouncing back from the frustration of El Clasico. Atleti beaten by Bayern, but group winners regardless, and Sevilla through as well. So let's talk about who teams are going to want. I'm looking at the group winners and the group runners-up right now. Barca, Atleti, group winners in theirs, Real Madrid and Sevilla, the runners-up. Who will these teams want to face? Because I look at it right now, and the way Monaco are playing both domestically and in Europe, even though they're arguably, along with Leicester, you have to say, the weakest group winners, I wouldn't want to face many of those. I think Leicester would be the only team that I would want to face out of that group winners category for either Real Madrid or Sevilla. In terms of the runners-up, Porto and Benfica, but the experience that those two sides have in Europe will make life difficult for any of those group winners, really, that end up drawing them. We're going to have some really tasty ties on our hands throughout the knockout stages. But who are Barca and Atleti going to want from those runners-up, really, in terms of style of play? Who will they think they can really outfox quite comfortably?
Yeah, I think from Atletico's point of view, a team like you mentioned, like Porto, is going to be one of the preferred options for them. I mean, they didn't look too convincing until last night against a very weakened Leicester side. So that's one of the teams that, if you're an Atletico fan, you'd be interested in playing, especially with another trip to not Lisbon, but over to Portugal. They'll have a good turnout for that game. But yeah, it's been a very strange season in terms of whether or not it's actually beneficial to be winning your group. I mean, Real Madrid last night coming second, that could turn out to be a real positive for them if they do get an easier draw like Leicester. But then you don't really want to second guess yourself, because you can end up feeling pretty bad about your result. I think Arsene Wenger put it best. He said after Arsenal won their group, he said, you know, we could still get a bad draw, but at least this time we won't feel guilty about it. And yeah, I think that's the attitude that you have when you try and win your group. But yeah, nobody will really know until next Monday.
Yeah, in terms of Real's draw, I think that they're kind of still hoping for Leicester or Monaco, even though they've... I think Leicester is probably their preferred draw for Los Blancos, just because the rest of the competition is so strong in terms of the first who finished first. But you know, that late goal might be a blessing in disguise, but it'll all depend on the draw.
It'd be interesting in terms of you think Madrid and Sevilla obviously can't face Barca or Atleti. Sevilla won't be able to face Juventus, which they'll be very pleased about indeed, and Real Madrid won't be able to face Dortmund. So when you look at Monaco, Arsenal, Napoli and Leicester, those four sides, Real Madrid will feel they've got a great chance against all of them. Arsenal will be considered the arguably the best of those three, mainly just on Premier League pedigree than anything else. I think if Sevilla went to a side like Arsenal, could do a really big shot on the Gunners, especially at the Emirates. I think Sevilla is a side that has gone, like Atleti have done in previous years, really under the radar in this competition. And the style of football that Sampaoli has them playing, I don't think his pedigree as a manager, but with fans in particular, is really regarded as high as it should be with the work that he did at Chile and now with Sevilla this season. I think this Sevilla side could go very deep indeed. Even if they get one of the bigger teams, so to speak, that they could get out of the group winners. For Barca and Atleti, I mean, everybody's just licking their lips at the thought of perhaps a Barca a PSG game or an Atleti against Manchester City sort of tie. It's going to be really interesting what happens on Monday. Gentlemen, moving into the week of the season coming up, round 15 of the season coming up, kicks off this Friday, Malaga against Granada. Barcelona travel to Osasuna, which... bottom of the league, Osasuna just need to get anything out of that, and it's highly unlikely you feel that they will. Sociedad take on Valencia, Las Palmas against Leganes, Real Madrid, Deportivo wraps up the Saturday. Sunday has Eibar, Alaves, Celta Vigo against Sevilla, Espanyol against Sporting, Gijón, Real Betis against Bilbao, and then Monday sees Villarreal taking on Atletico Madrid. That Monday night encounter, Ewan, is really the standout one of the weekend, you'd have thought, with Villarreal have been posing problems for plenty of sides this season, and Atleti need to find a decent win to just kick themselves back into gear before Christmas.
Yeah, I think Monday's the day to mark in the calendars. We've got the Champions League draw, and then we've got Villarreal Atleti in the evening. That looks like the standout game of the weekend. I mean, Atletico, they haven't been very good in recent weeks. They've struggled to score goals, and Villarreal, they've got the best defence in La Liga. They've conceded just 10 goals, and they've taken that honour from Atletico, who've held it since Simeone took over. So yeah, it could be a 0-0, but I think if it is a 0-0, it'll still be a fascinating one. You imagine that both teams will be quite fresh for this one. Usually after their European games, they've both had of a sluggish performance the weekend afterwards, but the fact that this is on Monday means there's no real excuses. I mean, Atletico Madrid have got 6 days to prepare for this one, which never mind when they have a free midweek, they even struggled to get 6 days in a row. So yeah, both teams should be fit enough, there should be no excuses, it should be an intense game. So yeah, I'm going for a very thrilling 0-0 stalemate.
Aldo, what about yourself? What else catches your eye aside from the Monday night encounter, of course?
Yeah, I mean, the other one, I guess, should be a fun one going off what we were saying earlier. Not so much a 0-0 match, but Celta Vigo against Sevilla should be a fun one. Obviously, Sampaoli and Berizzo, Bielsa disciples, and you'll be sure to get a lot of attacking football in those 90 minutes. So I'm going to go with a high-scoring performance in that one. So I definitely want to keep my eye out for that.
Yeah, I quite like the idea of the Betis against Bilbao game as well on Sunday evening, just wrapping things up with Bilbao. Still just not great at keeping clean sheets. Betis, as we said earlier, putting three past Celta Vigo, and not great at defensively either, but can grab goals when they need to this season. Be very interesting indeed what happens this week. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Ewan, don't worry, we will all be flooding to the shops to buy that book for Christmas. Once again, Ivar the Brave, of course, available. And Ewan available on Marker in English as well to read all of his thoughts on Spanish football. Thanks for joining us today, mate.
Thanks for having me.
And Aldo, as always, a pleasure to be greeted by your vocal tones as well. Once again, mate, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Ollie.
Cheers, gents. Remember to get onto Twitter @MarkerInEnglish, all one word. Get onto iTunes or Audio Boom. Subscribe to the podcast. Just search for I on La Liga, Marker in English as well. We'll do on that search. And, of course, on Facebook as well, Marker in English. I'll get to the website, marker.com/EN, for all of your Spanish football breaking news and views. We'll be back next week. It's a big old week. There's a big Monday night encounter, and there's a Champions League draw to get into as well. So I imagine we'll be coming back next Tuesday. Have a very good week indeed. Enjoy the football over the weekend. There's plenty of it. We'll see you sometime in the next few days. Have a good one.